As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
In 1330 BCE, give or take, the pharaoh of Egypt, Khepru-Ra, the god's father, Ai, journeyed to the west. The king was dead, and his power went with him. Now, there may have been a crisis. This tale contains far more speculation than usual. The gap between Ai's death and the ascent of a new pharaoh is frustrating. What happened and who was involved is still a matter of debate among historians. What follows is my attempt to put this all together. But I must emphasize, this is one viewpoint, and it involves a lot of conjecture. Hello, and welcome back to the History of Egypt podcast. Episode 160, Succession, Crisis? Today, something is rotten in the state of Egypt. King Ai was dead, and the thrones were up for grabs. Soon, power would shift to new hands, but before it could, there was possibly a challenge to resolve. It is an intriguing moment. This chapter comes as an offering given by Tito, Moby, and Martin M. These fine folks made donations to the show, for which I am most grateful. As we farewell King Ai and all the puns that came with him, I am indebted to your generosity. May the great god of growing, Min, bless your fields, your gardens, and bring you prosperity. To everyone listening, welcome to the show. Come, let's explore a curious tale. In Luxor, Egypt, the archaeological museum holds many wonders. Here, you will find magnificent art from the New Kingdom, like the 18th dynasty and later, statues of Akhenaten, Hatshepsut, Thutmose III. The great names are all here. You will even see mummies belonging to famous rulers, King Ahmose, who established Dynasty 18, and Ramesses I, who established Dynasty 19. Also, you will find relics of non-royal people, individuals who left their mark on communities, eras, and histories. In these galleries, you will find a man whose story is quite intriguing. Walking through the museum, go past the mummy gallery, where Ahmose and Ramesses lie in state. Turn right towards the ramp leading to the second floor. But before you ascend that ramp, pause for a moment. A display case on your right contains a statue. Well, part of a statue. You will see the head of a male. It is carved from beautiful stone with delicate features and details. The man has long hair, almond-shaped eyes, and he carries a feather, a fan, over his shoulder. His gaze is calm. He watches the tourists who pass by. They often don't notice him. At a glance, this statue, this man, might seem unremarkable. But look closer, and you will see an object of great interest. It shows a man with long hair. His cheeks are finely modelled and smoothly polished. The eyes are delicately carved, and they turn down slightly at the outer edge. The man's eyebrows are thick, tapering to a point at the outer ends. The statue is beautiful. 10 out of 10. The man appears contemplative, maybe pensive. His eyelids seem heavy, as if the owner was a bit sleepy. Maybe I'm imagining that, but the face is peaceful, which is at odds with the statue's condition. Tourists often miss this piece, or take a quick look and then move on. Understandable, the statue is broken. The man's face is badly damaged. There are chunks missing from his mouth, nose, ears, and chin. The eyes are chipped and scratched, and the body is entirely gone. You could easily mistake this for just another relic, damaged by time. But not quite. This one is different. The statue belongs to a man called Nakht Min. He was a military commander and a high official in the days of Tutankhamun and Ai. Nakht Min, or the god Min is strong, hasn't shown up in our story before, but his tale is important, because someone tried to destroy him. Nakht Min's statue in the Luxor Museum is terribly damaged. The eyes, ears, nose, mouth, and chin are all chipped and broken. At first glance, it may seem accidental, the normal damage that statues pick up over the centuries. But if we look closer, we can see it is anything but. The damage is targeted and specific. Most of the image, the hair, the cheeks, the neck, the fan, those are all intact. Only the main features have suffered. If the destruction was accidental, we would expect more damage overall, a general wear and tear vibe on the whole statue. Instead, we have damage that is targeted. Clearly, someone did this on purpose. Why? What was so special about this man? To answer that, we must go back, way back. Back to the reign of Tutankhamun. Specifically, Tutankhamun's death and burial in the Valley of the Kings. It is time for a flashback. Let's begin. In 1334 BCE, give or take, King Tutankhamun went to his grave. Following an unexpected and untimely death, the 19-year-old boy king received his last rites. That ceremony, that funeral, was organized and managed by Ai, the man who gained power following Tutankhamun's death. We see King Ai in Tutankhamun's tomb. In a rare instance of two kings in one burial, we see Ai officiating for the mummy of Tutankhamun. Nakht Min was also present at Tutankhamun's funeral. We know that because he donated objects to the burial. Nakht Min gave Tutankhamun shabtis. Shabtis, or ushabtis, are the small statues in the shape of people. They are designed to awake in the next world and help the deceased with work and business. Tutankhamun had many shabtis, but some of them were gifts, donations from his servants. Nakht Min gave Tutankhamun 5 shabti figures. They are beautiful. You've probably seen photos of these shabtis without realizing it. The figures donated by Nakht Min are wood with gold details and decoration. They show Tutankhamun as a mummy and holding the crook and flail. The shabtis are quite similar, but they vary by their crowns. Each figure has a different headdress for the king. One shabti wears the blue crown, the keprish. Two of them wear a headdress, the nemes. And another two have wigs, short curly hair framing their faces. So the shabtis are mostly identical, with a few variations. And on their bodies, these shabtis have hieroglyphs, short texts recording Nakht Min's gift. It is here that we start to learn about this man. The shabtis give a set of titles, the titles that Nakht Min probably held during the reign of Tutankhamun. The titles are Overseer of the Troops, Imira Mesha, Fanbearer on the Right of the King, Chai Hu Her Wenemi En Nesut, and King's Scribe, Sesh Nesut. So we have the basics of his job. He was a member of the court and a leader of Egypt's armed forces, quote-unquote. The titles are simple, they don't tell us much. Fortunately, there are a few more hieroglyphs, and these give a sense of Nakht Min's relationship with Tutankhamun. On the bodies of the shabtis, further texts describe the official serving his king. Quote, made by the servant, beloved of his lord, the overseer of troops, Nakht Min. Or, made by the true servant, one who is effective for his lord, the king's scribe, Nakht Min. And finally, made by the servant, the one who causes the name of his lord to live, the overseer of troops, Nakht Min. End quote. The texts suggest a relationship between Tutankhamun, either a personal, political, or friendly relationship. Granted, that is speculative. Phrases like beloved of the king are generic. They could indicate genuine friendship or simply high esteem in the court. So we take them with a grain of salt. The point is, Nachtmin donated Shabtis to the burial of Tutankhamun, which means that he was high status and he was present at the funeral. A couple other officials also donated items to this burial, and we'll meet them later. But do you know who doesn't show up in Tutankhamun's treasures? Which high official is curiously absent? If you guessed Horemheb, you would be right. The king's deputy, the leader of Tutankhamun's government, and the commander of the army, Horemheb, is totally unrecorded in the treasures or art of Tutankhamun's burial. We have images of King Ai on the walls, Shabtis from Nachtmin, and items from a couple other officials. But Horemheb, the supreme figure in the government, is absent. That seems strange. Why would he be absent when a figure like Nachtmin is present? Well, perhaps Horemheb was absent because King Ai excluded him. Perhaps, given the opportunity, King Ai chose to emphasize Nachtmin. That might sound strange, but we do have some evidence for it. When King Tutankhamun died around 1334, Ai took power. When that happened, the courtier Nachtmin donated objects to the burial of Tutankhamun. On those objects, Nachtmin recorded his titles, like Overseer of the Troops. It is useful material, but nothing spectacular. And if this was all we had to record Nachtmin, we probably wouldn't give him a second thought. But there is more. Once Ai came to power, Nachtmin started getting promotions. The man's statues record new titles and jobs. For example, we see Nachtmin as an Iri Pat, or Hereditary Prince, an Imira Mesha Wer, or Great Overseer of the Troops, or Great General. Imira Mesha en Nebtawi, the Overseer of Troops of the Lord of the Two Lands, and Khetemti Biti, the Seal Bearer of the King. End quote. Apparently, Nachtmin's star ascended rapidly under King Ai, and he even had epithets or honorary titles describing his status in the court. According to these statues, Nachtmin was also known by the following, quote, the favorite of Horus, lord of the palace, the eyes of the king, the eyes of his Horus, the controller of nobles or high dignitaries, great of praises in the palace of the king, and one whom the king magnifies on account of his excellent wonders, end quote. If that sounded like an onslaught of propaganda and boasting, it is. But the information is there. Nachtmin seems to become quite prominent under Ai. In fact, he becomes so prominent that he's one of the leading officials of the court. This was a significant rise, and it seems that Nachtmin's promotion came at someone else's expense. Some of these titles suggest that Nachtmin replaced another important man. That man was Horemheb. Horemheb had been the highest official under Tutankhamun. He had held power over the court and the government. He was incredibly influential. But in the reign of Ai, Horemheb fades from view a little bit. For a few years, we don't hear much about him. The reasons for this are unclear. Perhaps he was away from Egypt, leading campaigns on behalf of the pharaoh. Or perhaps he took a step back following Tutankhamun's death, biding his time, building his power. Or maybe we don't hear about Horemheb because King Ai replaced him. You see, when the general Nachtmin rose higher and took on all of those titles, he took some jobs away from Horemheb. Under Tutankhamun, Horemheb held dozens of titles. There is a great variety of them, but two are particularly important. Horemheb had been the Great Overseer of Troops, the the Emira Mesha Wer, and also the overseer of troops of the Lord of the Two Lands, the Emira Mesha en Neb-Tawi. But when King Ai came to power, Horemheb lost those titles temporarily, and when he did, the general Nakhtmin took them for himself. It seems that King Ai might have fired Horemheb from certain positions and given those jobs to Nakhtmin. Why would he do that? We now come to the most important part of the discussion. I've talked about Nakhtmin as a member of the court, how he donated gifts for Tutankhamun, and how he gained prominence under Ai. But we still haven't answered the crucial question. Who was Nakhtmin, and why would Ai promote him? This next part is a major point of debate among historians. For the past 100 years, scholars have gone back and forth on certain issues, and the one thing they disagree over most is the question, who was Nakhtmin and what was his relationship to Ai? Here is my best attempt to explain it. The records for Nakhtmin are few, the Shabtis from Tutankhamun's tomb, and a couple of statues that survive in pieces. On one of these statues, we have the hint of a title, Sa-Nesut-En. Roughly translated, this means the king's son of something. Apparently, Nakhtmin had a title calling him the son of a king. But what was the full title, and which king does it refer to? This is part of the main debate. Scholars interpret it differently, and they have their disagreements. Broadly speaking, there seems to be a consensus that the title King's Son of probably references Ai, and links Nakhtmin to King Ai as his son, grandson, or a male descendant. In other words, there is a decent chance that Nakhtmin was the son or adopted son of Ai. If that is true, he might be King Ai's heir, the prince of Egypt during this time. Again, that's a point of debate, but on the current evidence, it seems reasonably likely. So Nakhtmin gained power because King Ai took the throne. It seems that King Ai promoted his son, grandson, or nephew to a position of great power and respect, and as he did so, he sidelined other officials. Again, we can't be certain of any of that, but there is a strong chance that King Ai wielded his influence and replaced Horemheb with somebody closer to home. So Nakhtmin benefited from Ai's patronage. Whatever their exact relationship, the young general gained power, prestige, fame, and status under Ai. His rise was sudden, and maybe it ruffled some feathers. But Nakhtmin need not worry. He was the king's favourite, his heir apparent. King Ai had honoured him. Nakhtmin enjoyed the pharaoh's protection. But then, Ai died. If Nakhtmin was the son or relative of Ai, he was probably that king's heir. In the circumstances, Nakhtmin seems the best candidate to become the new pharaoh. And yet, he did not. Following Ai's death, the next pharaoh would be Hor-em-heb, the general so prominent under Tutankhamun, but recently eclipsed under Ai. Horemheb came back, took the thrones, and became the new pharaoh. The big question is, how did that happen? And why did Nakhtmin fail to inherit? Speaking frankly, we don't know. Following Ai's death, we enter a terribly vague period. There is a gap of at least a couple months where the information is blank. Before I started researching this period, I sort of assumed that Horemheb took over quickly, immediately following Ai's death. Nowadays, I'm not so sure. There is a decent chance that Nakhtmin tried to take the throne, but failed. The king's son may have sought his inheritance, but Horemheb blocked him, replaced him, and became king instead. That is just a possibility, I'm not confident of it. But you have to wonder, was there a power struggle? Did these two men fight each other for the throne? The idea of a civil war between Nakhtmin and Horemheb is not new. In the 1960s, a scholar named Shulman suggested a battle for the crown. The idea was tentative. Shulman was just running through various possibilities. And the concept hasn't really gained much traction. We just don't have any evidence for what exactly was happening. All we have are a couple of shattered statues and references to Nakht Min, who might be the king's son. That's not a lot to go on, and it certainly does not equal a civil war. The dramatic gap between the reign of Ai and the reign of Horemheb could easily be an illusion. Perhaps Nakht Min failed to take the throne because he died before King Ai. By the end of his reign, Ai was quite old, and it's entirely possible that his son or grandson predeceased him. That is a reasonable explanation. But it doesn't explain why Nakht Min's statues are so badly damaged. So let's hypothesize. If Nakht Min did fight against Horemheb, trying to claim power, then clearly Nakht Min lost. In that scenario, Horemheb may have destroyed Nakht Min's statues as a way of taking vengeance. Perhaps he wanted to ensure that Nakht Min, the king's son, was totally removed from the equation. Alternatively, if Nakht Min died before King Ai, then maybe Horemheb destroyed his statues for different reasons. Perhaps he was trying to assure his own legitimacy. Deleting King Ai's son may have been a way to ensure that Horemheb was recognized as the true pharaoh. So the destruction of Nakht Min's statues and his name could have different explanations. We have to keep that in mind. Nevertheless, this is a tantalizing question mark. Perhaps Nakht Min and Horemheb struggled for rule. Perhaps these overseers of troops, the Emira Mesha, dispatched military forces to claim their rightful power. Perhaps soldiers, armed with spears and swords, battled in the palace. Or boats, packed with archers, skirmished on the river. Maybe, just maybe, there was blood in the valley. The death of King Ai and the ascendance of Horemheb is a terribly vague period. As you can tell, putting together a coherent story is almost impossible on the evidence we have. The tale of Nakht Min is probably just getting started. Egyptologists have known about Nakht Min for 100 years, give or take, but it's only the past few decades that his role in society has become a bit clearer. Today, Nakht Min seems like a good bet to be the son or at least heir of King Ai. If that is accurate, then his story is a difficult affair. In theory, Nakht Min should have inherited power following Ai's death. And yet, he did not. The fall of Nakht Min was a small blip in Egypt's political history, but the tiny clues that he left behind might hint at a struggle for power. I will leave you with a text, a prayer, carved on one of Nakht Min's statues. Again, that statue is destroyed, but parts of it survive. And from these pieces, we get a lovely prayer, a hope for Nakht Min's eternal life. Quote, "The four winds enter in near you. They are friends. What is said has been done for everybody without concern. I know how to guide them. Their names are consecrated in the temples. This is done by the royal scribe, the great general, Nakht Min, true of voice. And Nakht Min says, may you place for me the offerings for the Lord of Eternity, coming and going to my tomb. The gods of my city desire that I may drink the water from the lake every day. For the Ka, or spirit, of the Osiris, the royal scribe, the great general, Nakht Min, the true of voice." End quote. The statue is shattered, but the words survive. Perhaps somewhere, Nakht Min can hear them. History of Egypt podcast introduction, take one. Episode 160, Succession Crisis. Take two. Episode 160, Succession Crisis. Take three. Episode 160, Succession Crisis?
Damn it! Who typed a question mark on the teleprompter? For the last time, anything you put on that prompter, Burgundy will read.
History isn't black and white, yet too often it's presented as such. Grey History, The French Revolution is a long-form history podcast dedicated to exploring the ambiguities and nuances of the past. From a revolution of hope and liberty to the infamous Reign of Terror, you can't understand the modern world without understanding the French Revolution. So search for The French Revolution today.